shitty. Humping that bulldog every night and day. And I never lost 1 minute of sleep and learned about a fate that I should have thrown. Big blades keep on turning. Death Raider keep on burning. Trolling.
Welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast, Jaybird. You're trolling.
Trolling down the river.
I would have preferred if you did the Ike and Tina Turner video or version.
Well,
exciting.
That
dancing.
Goes back a ways. Yeah, that one goes back to the when was that recorded? Do you remember?
I don't know. Creedence did late, it in the 60s.
Yeah, well,
that was during the times when Ike was still just beating her to death. The good old days.
Yeah, trolling down with a smitty.
Oh, God. It's cold.
That's your it sure is.
It's your weather report, everybody. It's cold.
Man, it is cold.
What's going on? What's going on in the Northwoods?
Lakes are starting to ice up around us, and a few people still fishing when they can find open water. But I was talking with Doug today at work, and he's convinced that for probably at least 2 or 3 weeks, depending on the weather, he can still get out of the big lakes, which he's planning on doing as much as he can.
I talked to the Tube Screamer today. That's his game plan too, just getting out there and dragging the big baits. We've talked about it incessantly the last few weeks. Trolling big baits, big meat. Give them something to eat.
We've got giving them something to watch too next week, huh? With trolling. Yeah. Speaking of trolling, huh?
Trolling deep dives headed your way.
Deep dive number one coming next Tuesday.
It's amazing. I'll tell you, it was shot that thing just the other day when I got off the water, and it's just like, that's why I love the podcast. I actually called you after the podcast. You can get so much more information because there's never enough time. It's like I talked about trolling for 15 minutes straight, no breaks for this video. I felt like I just didn't even scratch the surface, never
like you have to generalize too much. Almost
never even got into like rod holders, what rod holders are good, this, that, and the other way, nobody wants to watch the 7-hour Steve Paul trolling video. It's just like,
no,
here's this and here's that. So,
Well, I'll put that together, and I've only watched bits of it, but it looks good.
It's juicy.
Excited to put together something nice and get her out. Deep dive number one.
Deep
it's be cool.
Dive. Keep us entertained over the wind tar.
Some folks have been chirping in with what they'd like to see for other deep dives. It's just like, hey, because you're always getting emails from listeners that suggest, it's like, hey, can you do something in depth about like the structure one, for example. Which, that took a lot out of us, but especially you. But,
I want to do the structure video, but it would be like 4 hours long. It would be so boring.
4 hour.
Be like, all right,
war
folks,
and peace.
It's here's your intermission for a bathroom break on the 4 hour structure video. Exhibit 4, break line. Whatever. Come on. I get on a tear and just ramble incessantly. So, oh goodness gracious, what else is going on, Jay? Other than get the
Black Friday.
It's Black Friday. It's Black Metal Friday.
Yep.
if you go to the Muskie shop, white face paint, black dyed hair.
Speaking of the Muskie shop, I tried to get Fred to do one of those, to do another recording. Freddie Mercury
outboard. Come on now, guys.
Paul Merrill.
It's not that hard. Come on.
It's difficult. Yeah, but old Freddie was deer hunting every day, so I did not get to see him and have not got to
Freddie
see him
hunts
this week, so.
With passion.
He does.
Hunt
Fred
with passion.
He likes four things.
Four. Count them. Number one.
Deer hot dogs.
Number 2.
Venison sausage.
Number 3.4.
I don't know why that was funny. He likes slab crappies.
Number 4.
Muskies.
That's it, folks.
That is it. It's all 4 of them. Well, he likes his dog, too. He just got a new puppy.
Additional number 5. God, yeah. We're talking about Fred's puppy. Come on. It truly is Thanksgiving week when you're like, what's going on? Welcome to the Fred's Puppy Podcast.
Well, when you start talking about food and the Thanksgiving traditional, you know, festivities and meals, you immediately, tie in Fred with the whole deal.
There you go. I just want to do that voice through as a podcast. That's like my...
That's the best voice ever.
There's horrible shows where it's just like... These nefarious nincompoops won't be stealing Toyota Camrys anymore. Whatever, that show, I'm talking about, where it's like,
hey, what was that?
Ten on this episode of 10 Deadliest Car Crashes. And that's where the Johnny Boy comes from, This
that
Mayo,
yeah.
This Mayo Munchin' Freak Show. And it's that guy, he does the voiceover for that friggin' show, and it's always like just 10 craziest police chases.
It's probably something from the 90s, huh?
No, it's like on those bad channels where it's just like, QTV or, I'm making stuff up, or like the ID channel, you're like, why do I pay for cable? I don't pay for cable, but nonetheless, I steal cable. No, Jason. This horrible, true crime network.
Johnny Boy, a.k.a. the Mick. I like it.
Fred was seen eating slab crappie straight out of the dumpster of Captain D's. If you've seen Fred Palmero, call now.
Oh, yeah.
All by myself. Sorry, I don't know. I've had a couple Pepsis here. Anyway, Black Metal Friday at the Muskie Chuck. Jay, tell me about it.
Yeah. Well, it starts by the time you're listening. It's running Wednesday afternoon all the way through Cyber Monday, the 29th of November. So nice. You got several days to shop. And, basics of it are free flat rate shipping.
Free.
You don't have to pay for it. And then there's a bunch of categories and departments that are on sale. 10% off clothing, all the merchandise.
10% off, gifts. Like your grandma's pants.
Grandma lures.
Grandma lures.
Slammers. Slammer crankbaits. All hooks.
All hooks.
Yep, if you need a line for your reels this winter, line's on sale, and all leaders. Oh, what else? I think there's some other stuff too, but get the gist of it. There's a lot of stuff on sale and free shipping, and check out our new app. Make shopping experience great and easy.
Here's what I say, Jay. I'm just in a tear, right? I just scribble. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try live to just do the Black Friday commercial. What do you think?
In one take?
In one take.
Do it, man.
Black Friday at the Muskie Shop. Get your ass in here for sale. We've got free flat shipping. 10% off. Dude, I'm a mess. 10% off tackle boxes. Fill them up with 10% off slammers and grandma lures. But don't forget the line, leaders and hooks. We've got everything you need for musky season. That apparel you need, the Muskie Shop hoodies, the hats, the gloves. You need it, we got it. 10% off. Don't forget to check us out online, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, the app, Muskie360. Oh my God! I don't know. It's like you were just doing the most boring commercial ever. So you gotta jazz it up there.
That's pretty good.
Get your ass in here. 10% off.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah,
yeah, so that's what we got going on. It's going to be busy this week. All the traveling for Thanksgiving. So some of us won't be around too much, but we'll try to get all the work done that's needed, getting orders out for
if
people.
If you don't
right
like
away.
Your family, we've got the deals and savings for you. Hunt with passion.
That's also the Reloaded voice, though, too.
It's a hybrid Reloaded. It's really not. Yeah. There's something else in there. I can't quite put my finger on it.
Black Friday Reloaded.
Reloaded.
Anyway, God, man. Jeez. I've had like 4 tacos today and about 12 Pepsi. So that's the story.
Wow. Nice.
People are like, shut up, dude. Sorry. I'm having fun. Anyway,
Reloaded with passion.
We might as well do some Q&A, folks. You're like, oh, my goodness, you guys. Well, you know, you're driving to your grandma's. You don't want to be at your grandma's right now. You're going over there. You're going to eat some dry turkey. Might as well do the Q&A, Jay. You're going out of town for the Skanksgiving, right?
Yeah, I'll be driving. Yep.
Wowzers. First one up, Randall. What's the best tackle box options for storing a ton of baits? I've got a lot of baits that I like to keep in my boat because I really never know what I want to throw. What's the best option to keep them in tip-top shape so they're not getting rusty? And he goes on and on and on. But basically, he's asking to, you know, we're not melting baits. We're not rusty baits, which that's now my new fake name, Jay. Rusty Baits.
Uh-huh.
It's a check. I'm checking into hotels with that one from now on out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Wreck and Rack guy, and they make a really good box. Again, premium product. They ain't giving it away or anything.
Wreck and Racks are on sale now at the Muskie Shop.
10% off.
a new one came in. You haven't even seen it.
Buy a Wreck and Rack or you're a douchebag.
What?
He's got this incredibly light, small, inconspicuous light LED system inside the lid.
Inconspicuous.
Yes. Right. And so you know the standard one that's 24 inches wide, I think, like, you know, like a good moderate size musky storage tackle box.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really have a fancy name for it, like the musky slayer or something like that. It's just the 24 inch tackle box. But it's got a lighted version for anytime you're out at dark there, you push the button, that thing's lit up and it lights up for hours.
Look at that there.
Pretty cool idea. Never seen anything like it.
I mean, he's got the light up tackle boxes. The Wreck and Rack stuff is pretty pimp. I mean, you're not going to do better than that. That's top of the line. That's primo stuff there, Dave.
Yeah.
Premium.
Well, you know, Lakewood makes an awesome one too. I mean, the guy's asking about massive amounts of storage.
All right.
You can't beat the monster.
The monster.
Yeah. It's a very comfortable boat seat too.
It's funny what we've talked about, and this is just me and you gabbing about. There's hardly any boxes left. Like you got so there's the plant musky tackle box, what is it, 7915, I believe?
Yeah. Those were unavailable almost the entire year. We got some in 2 days ago.
Yeah, I mean, so
Literally, that was a supply chain issue. They're molded. I don't know where, but I can guess.
Yeah, well, you can guess. There's not a lot of options. So let's just run down because, you know, again, Randall didn't say what his budget is. So if money is not an object and you want the best of the best and you want something that's going to last forever, get the Wreck and Rack. Heck, you can get the light one. Here it is, Wreck and Rack lighted tackle box. That is actually really cool. That's really cool. So, you know, if you want to go top of the line, that's as good as it gets. It's going to dry it out. You know, there's the Lakewood stuff. It's got the soft side, so you're going to run into hooks sticking into that bad boy and all that other stuff. Yeah. I mean, as far as other tackle options, you know, the Plano Big Games, I don't know if they're still called that, but we're going to call it that 7915 model. We're going to call that the Big Game.
That's the one.
Yeah,
right.
They've always have been.
Mm-hmm.
Those are good boxes. However, it doesn't feel like you can fit that much in there, right?
Yeah, I've got a couple of those, and it's basically basement storage for overstock. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like they're okay, but it's like, it's I like my musky medium, and I like my just using those Plano trays. You know me. You know, every time we went fishing, you throw them in those 3730s and take what you need for the day.
Well, and the thing I'll say is this, is I liked Al Frost's setup in his boat. So Frost has a ton of the 3730s, which are going, what are the 3730s? They're the ones that have four compartments. They're just, it's a standard size box, right?
That's right.
It's going to hold like, one of those could hold like four regular Bulldogs or, you know, a bunch of cranks. There's also the deep box, like the Stowaway, and there's some deeper Plano. So if you need a lot of storage, but you don't need quick access, you're not worried about stuff tangling up, that's a solid option, right? It depends on like what your goal is. I mean, the way I do my tackle in my boat is like, I just want to be able to get the thing instantaneously. It depends on how organized you are. I am not enough of an adult to fish out of Plano boxes because I don't like putting things back, Jay.
That's why that underboss that you got recently suits you so well.
Well, because
it suits your style, you know.
ADD. I mean, it's just like, if I'm done with a bait, I've been known to just huck them in the floor of the boat quickly.
Speaking of that underboss, you know, huge podcast fan, John B, he came in and he bought one the other day. He's a truck driver, so he's occasionally going through the Northwoods, and he stopped in and had a nice long talk with him, and he picked up an underboss, and I seen him post something that he really likes it, and you know, he already installed it in his boat and likes the way it works out.
I can't comment because I help come up with it, so I'm very partial. I love mine. It is silly good. It's super easy. The thing I've noticed about the underboss on that, I mean, we're not talking boxes, but the underseat is, even if like a couple baits get hung up with each other, it's so much easier than it getting caught in some fabric. You know, I mean, that's my thing. Is it's I can get a bait out of there in 2 seconds. So, you know, those are your options anymore, dude. I mean, Randall, I hope it helps, but you know, there's not a lot of great options. I mean, and if budget's an issue, dude, there's always a 5-gallon bucket and some downspout. And if you've been on my boat, my giant tackle box, the inside of my tackle box, custom built box, is full of downspout still, because it's the easiest thing to get baits in and out of. So, just get creative. Jake, what do you guys think of trailers on bucktails? Do you think they make a difference? Should I be looking at grubs? Should I be adding blades to the back of bucktails? Is it going to be enough of a difference that I go through the effort? Huh?
Yeah.
What are you doing in
the background? Another good question.
What are you doing in the background, Jay? Are you repairing a grandfather clock in the background?
No. No, it's working fine.
What was that? I heard banging. Are you tinkering?
No, just walking around. Pulling up the computer.
Pulling up. I'm teasing. What's better?
Yeah, you're talking trailers. You had a nice video on kind of that MEPS trick you did. Not like it's some ultra secret ninja move or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it's something to adapt when you realize that you need it. Right. But yeah, there's certain tricks you can do if the conditions warrant.
I'll tell you, I don't know. When it comes to trailers on a bucktail, I have to have a reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like in it's sort of a process, and it's a gut check for me. So the knee-jerk reaction, let's say I'm throwing double eights, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're coming in, and they're coming in hot, and they're right on it. But they won't hit it. The next logical move at times would be to downsize, right? Maybe go to a single blade or a 500 to get them to eat it. You can sort of look at it, and I'm only really interested in trailers when we're talking June, July, August, maybe early September, to be honest with you. that's another option. So, you know, like we talk about sometimes, Jay, like the hierarchy, sort of the decision-making process, upsize, downsize, bigger baits, smaller baits, where we go from there.
Sure.
If I've been having success with, say, again, double eight, such a standard bait, you go, maybe I just need to change it up a hair. That's when I start thinking about trailers, because, you know, keeping a trailer hook on all these bucktails, or not trailer hook, but keeping a trailer plastic, whatever we're doing on there, that's just one more thing to contend with, right? You know, those Kalen's grubs I love so much, they're not giving them away for free anytime soon. So if I don't have to use them, I don't want to use them. But going, those fish are, excuse me, they're just on the cusp. That's when I break it out.
Sure.
And I think you're talking about like that MEPS video. I mean, that literally was the difference between getting the big ones to eat or not. I think if that's what you're referring to, because I had a smaller fish. Actually, I had one on and lost one, got another one, and then like had a couple big fish coming on. Screw it. I don't want to downsize. I don't want to upsize. I've already had action on this. What is it going to take to sort of get the action out of the bigger fish?
Mm-hmm. That's a good call.
Okay. You know, and like I said, it's that in between. It's like a in between call, right? Do I upsize? Do I downsize? Or do I take what I have and do I augment? Right. So we're just augmenting the presentation that's had some good response. On the flip side of that coin, the last thing I want on my bait is a trailer when I got nippers.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Right, right.
Right? And I'll give you, you said ninja trick. Everybody's doing a good ninja trick. We all throw double eights or single eights or whatever. It is always a good idea to have one of those that you've rebuilt where that back treble sticks out a little too far and that skirts up higher to take care of those nippers. All right? So if they're nipping at the skirt, you want them, when they go to nip at the skirt, that they got a little too much hook in their mouth than they're prepared for. All right? So you can make an extended eight a little bit longer, or you can put a stinger off the back. And I've done that with great success. It's that same methodology I've used. I think there's a video I did forever ago on the app. On adding blades and adding stuff, you can use that same method to put like a small stinger hook on there. So you just sort of got to gauge what they're doing.
You know, another easy way to do that would be probably a lot of bucktails have split ring rear treble hooks on them. It's just add two more split rings to it and then put some shrink tube over it.
Yeah.
You know, cost you all of, 30 cents.
Right. And there you go. You got that little additional distance.
Right, just that little bit more for those short hidden fish,
You know, again, I mean, I've fished with trailers on where you're sitting, we're losing trailers. Well, I need to ditch the trailer. So you just got to sort of make the call in the moment. And that is because you're going to read the follows. You're going to sort of gauge that activity level. You know, the typical, you just don't hear. I mean, how often do you ever read an article or hear something? It's time to upsize.
You don't, right. Right.
Right. It's always going down, going down, going down, starting too big and then go down from there. You know, it like I said, it's a in-between call. You know, it might be the wrong call that day to add a trailer. You know, I know there's guys that just swear by, they always have to have a trailer. On the same token, I mentioned him before, Al Frost is probably where my brain went there. You know, there's a conversation to be had between flashaboo and hair. Okay, so you look like, say, a RJ's bucktail versus a cowgirl.
Sure.
Different profile in the water completely. You know, an RJ's looks quite different in the water than a cowgirl. So what's, you know, you take a double eight RJs and a double eight cowgirl, that might be the difference between success. When you get into that bucktail world, you get in that blade world, we all know that the attractant is the thump of the blades and the flash, but you can sort of dial in from there. And I've seen it where it's just like big blades, small hair body is the ticket, right? You know, you might have double eights on an RJ and that profile, that bait's far smaller than that of a cowgirl.
That's exactly right. Right.
You got to go through that where, you know, maybe these fish have just seen too many blades. I mean, Frost wore by that. Where you got, I'm catching fish that have eaten bucktails before, but it's not about the blades. It's about the profile. Mm-hmm, so there's, depending on where you're at, it's something to look at. I mean, you know, you get, I'm sitting here looking at the wall of the bait cave and there's just piles of bucktails. And they all look, you know, they're all this, they're all that. I mean, we've joked about them before, the freaking Shumway Super Flashaboos. I mean, that's a freaking dust bunny.
Oh, the giant flasher?
Giant flasher, my apologies.
Yeah, right? yes.
You know, yep. I'm looking at a couple of those. They're just, I mean, you could dust your ceiling fan with those things.
Yeah, I mean, it's got the body profile of like a muskrat coming through the water. It's awesome. Yeah, it's awesome.
They're huge.
Plus, it's segmented, man. It's I mean, like, yeah, that's a different beast.
There's two of those hanging on the wall, and they take up like 15 inches of real estate on the wall for two baits. They're huge.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, there's something to be said about dialing in. If it is bucktail conditions, and you need to start searching through the different bucktails, so... you know, you talk about a deep dive. Maybe that's a point or a video or a whole podcast where we go, what's the difference in bucktails? You know, and sort of look at that because, you know, it's, you got single blade, double blade. And now we have configuration of skirt material. And does it make a difference? And skirt material makes a huge difference. And then you consider skirt material and we consider trailer material.
Oh, I absolutely. You know,
what can
I think that would be a great idea to do a deep dive on an overview of blades
we
in
should.
General. That
yeah,
be
because
really
there's there's so there's a lot more. You guys hear me go, you know, bucktailers. You know, you guys.
The boring presentation. Yeah.
But. You know, I mean, it's rinse and repeat. You know, your grandma can do it. 10% off on grandma's. But. Again, to dial in and just be just banging them. Yeah, there's some magic in there. So anyway, Connor, enjoyed your comments about tiger muskies last week. I as well fish northwest. What are some tips for trolling for tigers? Is it any different than trolling for true muskies? Yeah, because you're trolling for tigers, not regular muskies. Man, I can't say, I mean, that's the, probably the first question, a lot of questions where I said, I'd be making it up if I gave you a real solid answer. Right. I don't have enough stalker tiger experience to tell you a solid difference. I can give you my opinion, which would be bigger, louder, brighter. Okay. So following sort of the same thing, the first break, the areas are going to be the same as the discussion I had, I think last week about tigers, but as far as a solid difference, I don't know. I genuinely don't have an answer for that question that really is just like, this is the difference between trolling for tigers and that. What I can say is this, is those things like to group up a lot more. So if I'm having contact with a fish, I'm going to, in a difference for me immediately, even in the casting scenarios is, you know, if I've contacted a fish, I'm going right back through it. So you might have multiple contacts or multiple catches in a shorter amount of time or a shorter area or a very specified areas. But as far as like a, this is the difference between trolling for tigers and trolling for true muskies. I don't have anything other than just, like I said, conjecture and opinion, bigger, brighter, louder, and in a more condensed population. I got stumped a little bit, Jay.
I'm bigger though, huh? That's a general consensus. If you're in a, you know, like a Western tiger reservoir,
man, those things, I mean, again, looking at the wall here, there's a 12 inch friggin' hot orange grandma that has tiger written all over it. You know, and some old M9 Jakes that are fire tiger. I mean, they just like bright stuff. It seems like the brighter, the better, really work. But, you know, I don't know a discernible difference of something there. I go, this will happen versus this will happen. And that's just a lack of experience for trolling for tigers out there. What do you kill me? What are you going to do? You know, what do you do?
Yeah, I've caught some by accident. You know, our populations around here, it's generally like there's a few mixed in on some of the bodies of water, mm-hmm. and occasionally you catch one. But
well, that's a thing.
Targeting them is a whole different thing. Yeah.
Well, those are natural versus stalkers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I did notice that the stock tigers obviously congregated. You know, they really honed in on one singular area. But as far as in a trolling scenario to give you, you know, this versus this, I don't have that intel. I've actually probably not, I don't think I've read a single thing on that. Where like, you know, this is trolling tactics for Northwest tiger muskies, which is interesting. You know, I don't know. I would just take the typical muskie trolling, bigger, louder, faster, maybe, and go from there and see where it takes you. Rick M. What's the deal with 10-foot rods? Do you guys like using them? What's your opinion on 10-foot rods? Is it going to help me, hurt me? What do you think? What do you think, Jay? Go for it.
I think maxing out at 9 foot is the perfect length. This year went from 8.6 to 9 as my preferred length for rod. I don't think, you know, I guess I've fished a few 9.6 rods. Well, 9.3s for sure. Like Akuma makes a 9.3.
Right.
And
the ever popular 9'3".
Yeah. 9'3". I don't know where they came up with that, but, you know, I prefer the 9 foot length. The one thing as you get longer in rods, it's just that there's more drag and wind resistance, and it's just like they feel heavier. And I like a snappier, lighter looking rod that's still powerful enough to fish properly.
I'm sure I've said it about a trillion times. 9.6.
Yeah.
That's my jam. I'm like the 9.6 shield, and I actually tried, and because it was a prototype, I'll even mention it. Jay, I was telling you I was fooling with a real seat on a prototype the other day, right? And I went and I picked up, I have a Shimano Skix or a couple of those. I grabbed one of those just for the day because we needed to do a tweak on a real seat, right? We're gonna disassemble some things, try a different thing. So I spent the day with my Skix and I went, I'm not comfortable. I'll swear by it's not a sales push. That 9.6 shield rod is just amazing. I think that's like the perfect rod because it's not too heavy. It's not, but it doesn't feel whippy. And the amount of foregrip, I mean, I'm not small. So like the size of the foregrip on the Skix seems a little bit big for me in comparison to the shield. I don't like 10s though. There's one dude I fish with, and he's a dear friend of mine, Tim, from the Netherlands, right? Tim gets to throw a 10-footer because he's like 6'9". You know? I mean, he's giant. He makes me look like a child. I don't think – I mean, I understand that a 10-footer is going to give you some advantage in these big wide eights and this, that, and the other, but, you know, I don't really see myself throwing – bulldogs and gliders and dive and rise and having a singular 10-foot rod. I like the 9.6 because I can go out and I can fish a single rod and it's not an issue for me.
Yeah.
Right.
And I've thrown that 9.6 too, actually.
Yeah, it's a great rod.
I tried yours. Yeah. Yeah. That's nice. But boy, I like the 9s.
Right. You like the 9s. Like 9.6, it's a little bit of preference. You know, what fits you the best.
And that's exactly right. We could talk about a secret. What does the tube screamer prefer throwing tubes?
8.6.
Eight?
Eight, excuse me, you're right, 8.
Yeah.
On the tube, yeah. He throws an 8. That's the thing is like that shorter rod, pop, snappier, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's something to be said. I mean, you know, if you want to roll around with a bunch of different rods, that's what I call the Bassmaster's move. You know, you look at Booker, man, love Booker to death, pile of rods up front.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. A lot of these guys, pile of rods. I am too tactile I have to it has to feel a certain way to me. So going from this action to that action to this action to that action is not my bag. Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad, but it's just not where my head lives. So I like consistency and feel. I was throwing the 9.6 extra heavy the other day, and a guy was asked like what I could throw on it. And I mean, I can launch a 5-inch shallow rater a country mile on the extra heavy. I'm used to it. I can throw a giant killer. You know, I like to, I'm a one rod, one setup. This is what I'm throwing. I don't
you
care.
You truly
what
are.
Right. You've yes. seen it. Yep. It's not a, like I'm just talking. Yep. I mean, if I wanted to try to sell rods, I would say you need 14 different rods. I personally am a one rod, one reel. Let's get it done from there. And so I'm not questioning like, how many ounces is this rod set up for? All that crap. That's not my bag. You know, so.
Well, you just talked about the 9.6 advantage on light baits, and, mm-hmm. and that is truly huge. Yeah. Very important. Very important. Yeah, I mean, you can cast a Meps Giant Killer or a Booker 700 a country mm-hmm. mile.
Yeah, I mean, it just boils down to also two casting mechanics, though, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I've pretty much my whole guiding career, I'm a one rod, you know, whether, I mean, it was back in the day, I'm throwing the St. Croix extra heavy 8.6, you know, and I would throw that all year long, downsizing. I was just used to it. You know, it depends on how you cast. I sidearm a lot, you know, it's, you got to find something that fits. But I would rather have one rod, 9.6, obviously, like you said, 9.6, depending on your stature or what's comfortable. I just don't feel accurate with the 10s. Maybe I haven't fished them enough. Yes, you get a very wide figure eight, but once we're at 9.96, I don't see the casting accuracy trade-off for the width of the figure eight. And I think more so than anything, the advantage of this, a lot of these rods is taking the physicality out of the figure eight on a typical normal bad figure eight. Because with an 8.6, I had to hunch over.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's probably my biggest thing is mechanics. So I can do my crummiest figure eight on a 9 or a 9.6, and it's serviceable. It's a acceptable figure eight versus with an 8.6. If I was getting lazy, it looked bad. That would be my take. Like I said, I've played with the 10s. I might change my tune next year and be like, oh, you got to have a 10 footer. But at this point, they've not blown my brain. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're bigger in stature, I guess if you're 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", taller than that, yeah, I think that would be the equivalency thereof. But again, like you said, Jim's just demolishing fish all summer long on an 8-foot heavy. And there's times, again, this is the argument for a bunch of rods. There's times when I'm working, say, a jackpot or a weagle where I would love to have a 7.6. But I'm always sort of splitting the difference with rods. You know, because your reef hogs, I mean, Suix are not the easiest thing to work on 9-foot, 9-foot-6 rods.
Yeah, you're right. That's the shorter rods shine on some of the baits, and you just pointed out the exact ones where they work
way
well
better.
With, I mean,
but do you want to carry around? I mean, do you want to carry around a short rod for your antiquated baits, which is the reason you guys are after the first mm-hmm. year at this point, like the Titan, it's the whole point of the deal. You know, you got old baits that were designed around old rods and reels.
Uh-huh.
So you sort of have to find something that works where you go, I have an advantage, or at least it's even keel across the board. You know, I'm not going to really go out and work a Pose giant jackpot on a 10-foot rod. But I can do it on a 9.6. I can get it across my body enough to be moderately effective with it. Would it be better with a 7.6 Pool Q St. Croix Premier? Probably. You know? I mean, so, that, I don't know. I'm down the rabbit hole on there. But you know what I'm saying? It's find the rod that fits you the best.
Yeah.
Patrick. I fish in Ohio, and I seem to move fish pretty much every trip, but I rarely hook up. What's wrong with me? Am I a dummy? Huh? He said, I can get them to come into the eight sometimes, you know, but it just seems like I'm moving them, but I'm not getting them to commit. Thank you so much, my dudes. Love the podcast. Meow.
Yeah.
What do you do, Jay? You're seeing them, but you ain't getting them to commit or not getting them to stay in the eight.
Huh? He's getting a bunch of follows, and he's casting, and he's in Ohio. Okay.
The wet part of Ohio.
Well, kind of hard to say how he's working baits and what he's doing, so I don't know. I guess I need a little bit more information to determine exactly what you can change up.
Right, extrapolating from incomplete data. A couple things you could throw out there. If you're moving them, but they're not making it in, is maybe you're too fast or you're too slow.
Yeah, it's some kind of speed.
Mm-hmm. So you got to play with that, right? Maybe it's up a tick or down a tick. Sometimes you can go too slow where the fish are like, meh, I don't know, man. You gotta find that place where it's a predatory trigger. Just a hair too slow will turn them off like as bad as going too fast. So dial that in. You know, if you're seeing him coming, put a little juice on him. I am the king of slow. Always have been, always will be. I've probably said slow down on the podcast in the last 2 years more than anything else I've said. But if I'm moving him, the first time I see him, I'm going to try to juke him a little bit. Right? Give him a reason to react. So if you see the fish coming, maybe give him a burst of speed. Say you're fishing a 700 Booker tail. You see the fish coming, whoop, little quick reel turn, and see if that gets him going. If that gets that fish fired up, you better speed up some more, right?
Classic Booker trick.
Mm-hmm. Gun the reel.
Gun it halfway in.
Right. Gun it when you see him. Just see what it does. If you're getting if you're not catching them, it ain't gonna kill you to not catch one more. You know what I'm saying? If it's to the point where you're like, ah. What's one more to play around with them? You know, at a certain point, you catch enough of these things where you go, I'm just going to play with them because I can. And you start learning there's these little facets, there's these little things that can change the game, where gunning the reel on a bucktail or gunning the reel on a topwater, just a harder rip, that last rip before you get into the figure eight with a crankbait, or, you know, a longer pause on your glide bait. Mix it up, okay? So it sounds like if you're contacting fish, you're getting engagement, but you're not getting what you want, change it up, right? Stop doing what's not working. Take what's not working. It's only partially working. If you're getting a follow, you're only partially completing the task.
Right.
Okay? Fix it. Change it up. Okay? So you I tell people this on the boat all the time, especially when it comes to a figure eight scenario. You have a split second to make the right decision. At a certain point, you've done enough that it's instinctual in reading a follow, but a lot of times it's just a guess. Right? He looks hot. Well, what does a hot fish look like? He has motion in his body. Right? He looks snaky. He looks S'd up. There's a slither to him. Right? If that fish looks like here is a log coming in, here's a straight log. He's not.
Yeah, two feet under the bait.
Right. Here's a log. Yeah, just a cruising log. That's not a hot fish. But that thing that's got some motion in him, that's a hot fish. Whether it's a little motion or a lot of motion, that tells me immediately I need to do something. That thing that comes in 200 feet under the bait and goes, I am a submarine, that tells me I need to drop that thing down and dead stick it. Or I need to jig it. I need to do something a little bit. Mm-hmm, I'm going to have to finesse him to get him to open his mouth. But if you're missing those fish that are coming in and have some motion, right? And I'm not talking, you have to see it to know it. That's the one thing about muskie fishing where, you know, if I would love it, Jay, at some point, if we just had like some floating camera where we could just document the different stages of what a fish looks like while they're following, you know, but you'll see the motion in their body. The more motion in the body, the hotter the fish is, the more you need to get away from them. You've got to play keep away. The more docile, the more just that he looks, that means you're going to have to finesse it. And you're going to have to make an assessment, huh? Keyword of the podcast here. You're going to have to make an assessment of what that fish wants quickly. You know, I've had clients where they see a fish coming in and they just start putting the heat on it. And the thing's out of there. And then, you know, a guy 2 weeks later puts the heat on it and the thing eats. I mean, there's sort of your Russian roulette. You're just throwing it against the wall to see what sticks. The only difference in between people who have done a lot is seeing enough muskies coming in to sort of have just a knee-jerk reaction. If I did this before and it worked the last time I did it, that's the only difference. So you're going to have to get more of those in your belt. Play with it, right? If you're already not catching them, make it a game and see what you can do to change it up and make them happen. Mud Puppy says...
Mud Puppy. Cool name.
I'm a creaker. Mud Puppy. What makes an area better than another? Say bone. Oh, one. I'm a, it says bone. Say.
Huh?
Hey, I'm sorry. There's a typing error. There's a typo. And it just made me laugh. What makes one area better than another? Say one beat weed bed versus another weed bed, etc. How do you determine what weed bed's better than another? What rocks better than another? What is making this area better than another?
Congregation of bait.
Congregation of bait. Okay. That's solid as it gets. I would say, to reinforce that point, the structure leading in and out of that area. Right? So if I say I've got a weed bed on so-and-so point or this side of this or that side of this, you know, if you look and there's more structural complexity, and let's say it's sight unseen. Let's say you go, all right, there's a weed bed on the east side. There's a weed bed, not even east and west. Let me back that up. Let's say there's weed bed A and weed bed B, right? They're relatively close together.
Okay.
But weed bed A is just a first contact point up to a singular break and then vegetation. Weed bed B is the contact point into some structural complexity, maybe with a small point, maybe with some tighter squiggles coming into that thing and maybe a creek channel. Man, B's going to be fire compared to A in most circumstances. That's the difference. You know, Jay said about the presence of forage. Well, I can I pretty much tell you, unless it's some outlier, that the structural complexity will dictate the forage presence. So,
Well, I was just thinking, I think you hit it on the head there, because sometimes when you fish lakes, especially deep, clear lakes, that have, let's say you got weed bed or structure point A and structure point B.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, if you're scouting out during like off hours in the day, the bait's not going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
The bait doesn't move in until low light situation. And at that point you're running and gunning or doing your thing and hitting your spots. So it's hard to determine, but if you use your structure point that you just tipped in on there, that would be the place to put your, you know, 1 hour of prime time light condition to work.
Right. That's the thing.
I like it. Yeah.
You should be, you know, in that mid, you know, what Jay's referring to. Let's say it's a big long day on the lake, right? And you're just it's a new body of water and you're trying to figure it out, right? You got to be trolling that midday and looking for the structural complexity, or sit down and eat a sandwich and look on your app and go, okay, where is, and again, we all know muskies love weeds. So let's go around this hypothetical lake. And we go, there's a weed bed here and there's a weed bed there. check. Now, the most structurally complex place on this lake that might have some beautiful point or a hump or something like that, there's no weeds over there. But we want to fish the weeds. We're in July. That's where they should be. How do I pick to focus on A versus B? Is once we have found the cover that they're liking, check out what the structural complexity in and around that is. I mean, that's the quickest way. Are you going to be right all the time? No. But are you going to be right most of the time? Yes. You know, so just getting out there and assessing mm-hmm. the water. I mean, it's about catching a muskie is about being effective. And so be effective. Do that map work ahead of time. You know, you can generally find those things. Now, again, I'll eat crow on the fact that there are some random humps or reefs or rocks and stuff that at times are just like they produce, and I can't tell you why. It just is what it is. But if you're generally looking for the right situations, the right weed, the right wood, you're going to find some structural complexity in and around that. All right, Pete. It's not Pete Main, it's another Pete, I'm guessing. Pete says, love the podcast. How do you choose between rubber baits? How do I choose between a bulldog versus Medusa or a swimming dog versus Poseidon? What's the difference between these baits? One's a bulldog. One's a Medusa. You know,
they do run different. They do run different at different depths. So, you know, if you keyed in on what kind of depth you want to target, that might, make it a more speedy process choosing the right lure for that particular situation.
I'm a bulldog guy over Medusa in general, but Medusa seem to have a little bit more hang time to them. A little flatter bottom, right? A little more surface area to fall. You know, the fall off rate of a bulldog is a little more aggressive, where a Medusa slides in at a different angle. Okay. I'm 9 times out of 10 going to reach in for a bulldog. That's a confidence thing for me. I do catch fish on Medusas. However, I'm usually fishing Medusas around shallower cover that I need an aggressive presentation around. Okay. So I'm not looking to finesse a Medusa. I'm looking to rip the crap out of it. So if I've got, you know, certain depth over my weeds, that would be my call there. I mean, it's not this versus that. I mean, they're purpose driven. It can be this versus that, you know, of what your preference is. But like I said, there's going to be that little more hang time with a Medusa. I don't think it's necessarily more action or less action out of either of them. It just needs to be purpose driven over like how you're presenting them. So like a standard bulldog, longer pulls in my mind, a Medusa is going to be a harder, more erratic presentation for what I do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, when it comes to a swimming dog versus a Poseidon, I mean, I look at a swimming dog as a very mid-speed to slow-speed finesse presentation. It's got a really fat little wobble, little boop, 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 side-to-side on it that I personally like. I catch more fish on swimming dogs than I do Poseidons. But I probably give the swimming dogs more water time, but the Poseidon seems like it likes a little faster speed. It doesn't seem to have as much action at slower speeds. That would be my take. I don't know, JD. What would you throw in the ring on that?
Yeah, I like the roll on the Poseidons, the mm-hmm. body roll. It's got a really cool body roll. But again, like you said, it's about speed with those. And I don't use swim baits like that as much as I would use a Medusa, or as much as I would use a Red October tube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You get into you got your tubes, you got your toads, you got, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, with the tube, that's a deeper, more pile driver presentation in my mind, where the toad's a little more finessey. Yeah, the bulldogs are ripping a fall, and the Medusa to me is like rip, 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 you know. again, you're just sort of assessing that moment. I keep them all on the boat. I mean, I'm not like, I like this one versus that one. Just the situations I find myself in general on seem to fall more into that bulldog land. Sam, last one we got, because it's turkey time, Jay. What are you thankful for, Jay?
Well, everything.
Jay is thankful for everything. That's a great answer.
Absolutely everything. Yep.
Look at you. Just thankful for it all, folks. Turkey. Are you a cranberry dressing kind of guy, Jay?
I'm not a big cranberrier. Mm-hmm. I just like turkey. Lefse and turkey.
Mm. I just like the skin. I'm like the Ed Gein of Thanksgiving.
Okay, that's kind of gross.
Well, whatever. You guys are up there. Serial killer town in Wisconsin. That's my favorite Wisconsin thing. It's like home of the most serial killers of all time. You got Dahmer, you got Gein, you know, that's a good country. I just like, listen, turkey skin is the greatest thing ever. Just the greasier, the better. Sam, reels are freezing up on me. What do you do, my dudes?
I got the answer.
Stay at home.
No. Aww. Get out there and fish. You can't catch them sitting on the couch, folks.
Can't catch them from the couch.
Jake Smith, son of Smitty.
Son.
Awesome. Oh, tip.
God, was that like Worf, son of Moog? Jake.
Exactly.
Son of Smitty.
5 gallon bucket, right?
Full of lard.
Or smaller. Nope. Bear with me on this one, Stevie. Empty. Nothing in it.
Nothing in it.
Except a sterno.
Mm.
You light the sterno, you put it in the bottom of the bucket, and I think he puts something on there so it doesn't melt, but underneath it, and he brings 3 rods in the boat, and he puts 2 of them horizontally over that. Heat rises up, keeps them nice and toasty. Every 5 or 10 minutes, if he starts freezing up, he just rotates.
Huh.
And I'm like, oh, I'll be darned. And he showed me a picture of it in his boat. I mean, it's not pretty, but, you know, it's very effective. And he's like, I got no freeze-up problems. Because he's like, as soon as you start getting ice buildup on those reels, on the level wind, and they always kind of bunch up on the side, and then the level line won't travel all the way from side to side.
Uh-huh.
And if that's the case, you're gonna damage your reel.
Oh, I've done it so many times.
Just, you know, strip the pawl and done. Dunzo. In for repairs.
Dunzo. Straight to the trash can. Dude, I've done it so many times. Now, I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
WD-40 works wonders.
Yes, that's true. Also,
it is a water repellent. Smear it with Vaseline. I've seen that done. if you keep a large quantity of Vaseline on your boat, it's always convenient. You can use the WD-40 trick. You can use anything that's going to be a water repellent to keep it off. Like you said, though. Man, I'm not having fun when reels are freezing, and I deal with it. And you're sitting there going, "This sucks." You know, when the line's freezing to itself, that's a tough day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just got to keep on it. Probably when trolling, that's like the scariest for me. Is like if the reel is frozen up when trolling, and then a fish hits, you might as well just like have no drag at all. Again. Probably the sketchiest thing when you're doing those sub-freezing temperatures is just sort of making sure you're not, like Jake said, or you said, you're not going to break the gear. Having some stuff on hand so you have a backup so you, again, you can warm that other reel up, because I've seen it happen a ton of times. Like you said, the pawl is not, if it's not going side to side, it's not making its complete movement as it should. That's doing damage.
Yeah, right. It is.
So you might be like, oh, I've got a, you know, and I've had it where it's like, there's a quarter inch of ice on either side, and now it's just banging back and forth between those. That's forcing that pawl, which travels on your worm gear, which is the gear that sends your line gatherer side to side. You know, if you're damaging that, then that thing's going to be a mess.
Mm-hmm.
I like the sterno. I wondered about the heat in the line. Did he say anything about that? Like, is it warm enough that, like...
Nope, not an issue. He's never had an issue with that. I mean, it's cold out, you know, and this, you know, you got a picture that the rod and reel are what, at least 2 feet above the sterno.
Does he cook baked beans over this as well?
He does take a bean break occasionally. Yes.
Typical Smitty, the Smitty bean break. Oh, everybody gather
around.
Get
some beans and some dinner rolls.
Oh, we're going to gather around the 5 gallon bucket and have some beans. Jake's famous bean warm up.
Hey, if you can get warm food on a cold day trolling in late November, mm-hmm. it's a good thing.
Buddy, that's why I pull right into a restaurant. if you're right on that, you know, I got a place I can get coffee most days. It's just like you pull in there and you go, all right. Who's not excited about the Smitty bean warm up? And that's what it's not, you can't say it's hot. They just sort of warmed it up. Oh, might be icy at the bottom there. Dig in, boys.
Wow.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, listen, if you want to win a Smitty bait from the Muskie Shop, just send the Smitties a message and ask them about their world-famous Smitty bean warm-up. So if you
send them your favorite bean recipe.
Yeah, send the Smitties your favorite bean recipe, screenshot it, and then send it back to us, and we'll send you a Smitty bait. Jay, happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you.
You know, it's a time to be grateful for things and stuff.
It is, yes. It's gonna be a fun weekend, so I'm looking forward to it.
Anyway, folks, enjoy your turkey. Catch you next week. Later.
Got a good fish on a Smitty, humping that bulldog every night and day, and I never lost one.